So thank you for that nice introduction. Thank you also to the managers for organizing and for inviting me up here to get to spend time with you in the Pacific Northwest too. So today and tomorrow we're going to do practice together and reflection on the Dharma that's around the theme of transforming the world through the heart is the title here. And it's nice to get to practice in community together. I know you have these retreats periodically here at Sims, and maybe some people know each other and some people don't know each other. So I thought it might be nice just to get to meet the person or a couple people who are around you in case you don't know them. And maybe you can just share your name and where you live, and also you could just tell them what made you show up here today, or what you're hoping to come for, or what made you show up, something like that. So why don't we just take a few minutes to like meet people around? Oh, maybe I should ask the other question. How many people were not there last night? Okay, right. Okay, we had half and half, right. And how many people are new to meditation? Or come here. So, okay, great. And even those of you who have done meditation, how many people might be not familiar with practices of loving kindness or metta or Brahma Viharas or things like that? Okay, great. So last night I talked about, the talk was called A Radical Path of Mind Training, and it was just explaining a little bit of a perspective on the path of Dharma and meditation and how that unfolds, and one way to think about that in some ways, which ended up being a giant sports analogy. And someone had asked a question in the end that I was thinking about afterwards about, and unfortunately I don't think that person is here, about, well, how does it work? So, you know, in the sports analogy, I was talking about, like, I was equating mental training with physical training in some way, and that in the same way that it's possible to train the body, the physical body, in different ways, and that anyone can benefit from doing that to whatever extent, you know. That similarly, it's possible to train the mind, even though it's not as widely understood or recognized or glorified, certainly, in our culture at this time. And someone was asking me, like, well, how does that work? You know, with physical training, I understand a little bit about how that works and what I should be doing, but I understand how mindfulness, per se, will help to develop the mind. I was thinking about that a little bit afterwards, and I gave, in some ways, like, too complicated an answer to that question. So if anyone knows that person, you could tell them to re-listen to this tape, if there's a tape in this, for a better and pithier answer about it, perhaps. But I thought we'd start with that, with also, in order to explain also about what it is that I'm hoping we'll do today, which is a different kind of training. So in some ways, then, in Vipassana meditation, mindfulness is one of the key elements of cultivating a sense of presence, of knowing what's actually happening in the present moment clearly. So what's happening through the six sense doors, just as it is. And in the answer I gave there, I was describing also many other different characteristics, qualities of mind that get cultivated at the same time through the Eightfold Path and also through meditation itself, so including a sense of collectedness, concentration, a sense of balance, a sense of investigation, so many different aspects of mind that get cultivated too. Really, in the Vipassana practice, what we're doing is seeing into the nature of what's true about who we usually experience ourselves to be and what is true about the world, about reality, what is actually there that we can take refuge in, things like that. So through attention, we can start to see that things that we usually perceive as solid are actually not solid. So basically, we are able to perceive the three characteristics, so like change, anicca, that is there in all aspects of experiencing the body, the mind, externally, internally, through that understanding that there is not a solidity to things, and not a permanent solidity, nor a permanent separate independence of anything or person. And that thus everything that we find in our experiential world is actually not ultimately permanently reliable in a way that we usually perceive it to be, including, actually most importantly, that which we conceive of as ourself. So we usually don't perceive this in our normal, natural way of going about it because we're not paying attention in an ongoing way. And we could see this also even with phenomena in nature. Like if on most days, if you look at the sun, which you shouldn't do really, but if you, you know, look at the moon or the sun or something, it seems pretty steady in the sky during most times. So only if you really pay attention for a really long time would you notice the movement, the perceived movement, right? Because actually what's happening is the earth is moving. Or maybe sometimes at the very end, if you're watching a sunset for a long time, you notice the sun is going down, but it's hard with our own just eye to perceive that movement in the same way that you might be perceiving the movement of my hand or arm, right? Like that. Or with your own body, for example, like we usually don't kind of perceive our hair growing, right? It seems to be happening slowly. But then just at some point, you're like, oh, I need a haircut. You know, it's like you see that there's some, you know, something has happened and you need a haircut. But you don't actually see the hair growing usually like that, right? So similarly, like actually we're not paying attention and in a continuous way to experience in the mind and the body so that we don't perceive these things that are actually true, in fact, about change, about shifting, about change. So part of what we're doing in the Vipassana practice is applying with mindfulness our attention to whatever the phenomena that arise, and then through sitting there we can become aware both of the changing nature of things, but also equally interesting and important is that everything is just happening on its own. So when you're just sitting here and there's not an intention of doing something, but things seem to be doing, then you know it becomes more clear that like you're not the puppet master of experience. You know, there's just a flow of experience that you're calling yourself or this or that, right? But the thoughts are coming on their own unscripted, body sensations are happening unscripted, and so on. Okay, so that's the somewhat of an explanation of like, well, how does mindfulness apply to actually gaining wisdom or insight in some way? Is that it's through actually applying our attention and being able to see clearly that then we can actually align more to how things are, right? And then actually live more and more from this place of what's true, like that we're not this solid, independent, separate being in some way. So then actually what we're going to do during this weekend retreat is a slightly different one, which is a different kind of mind training. And I think it's helpful to understand that there's different kinds of mind training that are possible. So this is a complementary one of actually cultivating wholesome states of mind and heart. You know, so actually developing the muscles, so to speak, of positive, wholesome states of mind through intentional development of these states, through the intentional cultivation of these states. So it's a different kind of training than is done when you're just sitting there open, allowing whatever comes, right? But also it is connected, and so I'll explain a little bit about how and why and things like that. So for those of you who are familiar with the Eightfold Path and so on, sometimes people who are diehard Vipassana practitioners think to do this kind of heart practices is a little like second tier or, you know, not hardcore enough for them or something. So by way of explaining and putting it into context of Eightfold Path, this is, I would say, falls in the area of right effort. So one of the aspects of Eightfold Path is about right effort, wise effort. And so this is about knowing when a wholesome state has arisen, right? And then cultivating that along, so actually supporting that. And then understanding the conditions that lead to the arising of wholesome states and trying to basically support the arising of those conditions too. And then on the other side, it's knowing when an unwholesome state has arisen and trying to let go of that. So understanding that is not skillful, so not sticking with that and cultivating that. And also trying to understand what are the conditions that lead to the arising of the unwholesome state. And then trying to avoid those conditions. So it's basically understanding cause and effect and then trying to use that to your benefit, in some ways you'd say, to cultivate wholesome states of mind. So this is like actually, you know, like developing the right muscles. So this is like actually developing the body in this way, developing the mind in this way, skillful cultivation of the mind. Another perspective on it when you consider about the aspect of conditionality, though, is that we're in some ways learning to let go of the other stuff such that these states can arise. So one perspective is that there's a purity of the mind, a purity of consciousness, and then we get duped by temporarily visiting unwholesome states, kilesas, if you will, which we believe in, of aversion or of fear or greed or, you know, all the opposite of the wholesome states, right? So actually, there's one perspective from which we just need to see through those and let go of those, and then what shines forth can be the wholesome too. So you can hold that as a hypothesis and see if that seems to be true or not, or how hard you feel like you need to work, or, you know, it's different perspectives on it like that. So for myself, these practices have been complementary, and I began my practice with vipassana, with insight practice. And at the time, I think even in kind of Western vipassana, there was very little attention paid to this intentional cultivation of states of metta and compassion, joy, things like that. So if you did a 10-day retreat, it was kind of an add-on, like at the right last, you know, 10 minutes before the thing closed or something like that, right? And then I think that, you know, as the Dharma is developing in the West, it was sort of became apparent this is actually very helpful for people. And it both is a meditative practice of concentration, so it develops collectedness. Very specifically, it's a concentration practice. But it's concentration practice on a very wholesome object. So you could do concentration on anything. You could concentrate on a particular word or a mantra. You concentrate on a picture, you know, but this is a like kind of a twofer of positive mental training, because it's on a very wholesome state too, right? So then as my own practice went on, maybe after about 10 years, I started to get very interested in this cultivation of these states. And for me, actually, even in terms of, you know, what is the purpose of this training? Like, what is the results of the training and what is possible? I always have been inspired specifically by examples of people who seem to be able to live from these wholesome states much more, you know. So, you know, it can be good to think about, like, well, what's my motivation or what's my aspiration? And I didn't always understand when people were talking about enlightenment, this and that. Like, I didn't always relate to what that meant by that. But then I remember hearing about different people who had just a very pure-hearted way of being in the world, like, full of generosity, full of love, and being very inspired by that. So some examples are like, there's a teacher and yogi named Dipama, right, who lived in, only passed away in the, like, 79 or 8, no, maybe late 80s or something. Was alive during all of our lifetimes here, anyway. Who was a great yogi, but also who developed a lot of concentration and a lot of these states of love. And this, I've never met her, unfortunately, but in the stories about her, described how that was really the immediate primary experience people had of meeting her, was of this sense of great love coming from her, you know, and that actually influenced people, you know, in her neighborhood even, you know, without her, like, intentionally doing things, like, it influenced the whole field around her, you know. And I thought, wow, that's really very inspiring to me, that that's possible, to be so pure-hearted in that way. And also just what a wide sphere of influence is possible then, intentionally or unintentionally, from the purification of heart, you know. And even if one has never met someone like that, we could reflect on, like, what it's like when we have met someone in whose presence we feel safe and cared for. Or maybe another way of saying that also is just someone in whose presence we feel like no threat of violence, like no threat of them doing something negative to us, physically harming us, yelling at us. You know, when you're in the presence of someone like that, it allows you to really relax and be your best in some way, right? You know, feel, connect with that sense of love yourself. And otherwise, just as human beings, as animals, like, when we're around someone who we feel like, oh, they might do something, like, violent or manipulative, we have to be on guard a lot, isn't it? It's very tiring. It's like we have to check out, like, oh, what's going on? What's, you know? So most of us have had experiences on both sides of that, right? When you think about that, of, like, times when you've been around someone that it feels like, oh, this feels like I can just relax with this person. They have general sense of goodwill towards me. They're not going to try and be sketchy with me in some way, right? How you are in that case. And then also the other side. So when you're with someone who you feel like, oh, I have to be very much on guard, and it feels very unsure how they're going to act or what's going to happen. So the beautiful thing is that all of us can actually cultivate our sense of being these kinds of beacons of goodwill, of love, of safety in the world, you know. And like, what a beautiful thing. Here we have Training Academy of beacons of wholesome mind states in the world. So just think like how great that would be for us all to develop that for this weekend, which is a beautiful thing to spend our time doing, and then to be able to bring that out into the world. So welcome to the Academy of Wholesome Mind States. Thank you for coming. It's very good. It's benefit for yourself and for everyone, you know, that you're interested in doing this. So also even from a pragmatic standpoint, you know, about cultivating these different states of mind, there's a great quote from Shantideva, who was an 8th century monk, that was about, how do we relate in the world? So sometimes we think like, oh, the problem is everyone else out there. You know, they just need to change and be different and follow this better script and do this thing better or act the way I want them to. And it's not a very likely recipe for success, right? Because people don't really behave the way you want. Things don't really behave the way you want them to, and even yourself, you know, you don't always behave the way you want. Things don't come up the way you want, and your body doesn't behave the way you want. Punctuation of drama. And so so it's like, then, you know, so Shantideva is saying, like, so what do you do then? I say the world is, in this metaphor, is like there's thorns and things in the ground. So one plan is then, like, I will cover the ground in leather or in hide. I'll cover everywhere in the world with leather, so then it's safe for me to walk, right? Or how much easier is it to actually just put leather on your feet or put something protective cover on your feet, right? So then you don't have to try and change everything but put protective cover on the feet, which is actually what we do when we wear shoes, right? And then it's actually okay to walk around, like you don't get cut, things like that. So he says, to cover the earth with sheets of hide, where could such amounts of be found? But simply to wrap some around your feet, and it's as if the whole earth had been covered. So in this way, instead of trying to change everything externally, we're actually working with the mind, like working with the mind itself. So the place where we receive experience, where the world gets created in many ways. So understanding that this is also actually a very powerful way of developing a different relationship to the world, really of transforming the world. So, you know, what would it take to transform the world into a world of love, into a world of connection? And a lot of times we think, oh, it would mean like everyone else has to do something different in how they behave. And observe your own mind and thoughts about this. It's like, oh, they should have done this, they shouldn't have done this, you know. They shouldn't have cut me off in traffic. I can't believe that guy took the last parking plot, you know, right? It's like they should behave differently. Versus like, oh, what would it be like if we actually had some transformation of our own heart through which then we would experience the world differently, right? So I heard a story of the Dalai Lama going to an aquarium and, you know, someone who's a practitioner and actually like going and touching all of the different fish tanks, and someone asked, like, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm wishing well for all the fish. Like, I'm basically blessing each of the fish in the fish tanks. So it's like that. It's like, oh, there are all these living beings around. Like, what if you yourself became like a fountain of blessing in this way? You know, then actually then you have transformed the world into a field of love. And it doesn't have to be because everyone else changes, but actually because that is what is emanating, you know, from here. So a beautiful thing is that we all have this capacity, like every single human being has this capacity. So as I was saying last night, like most people don't know they have mental capacity for training. You know, it's not widely known that it's possible to train the mind. We know it's possible to train the body and to be physically fit and that anyone can benefit from whatever amount of fitness they can do. You know, and there's certain like recommended amounts, like exercise at least 3 times a week or 5 days a week or whatever, right? But hasn't yet transformed in our culture to understanding, like, oh, mental training is good. Like, you know, at least 3 times or 5 times a week, engage in mental training, you know, something like that. So that is something of what we're up to here today, and today and tomorrow, actually. I guess I am continuing the sports metaphor a little. I said I wouldn't, but so like in athletics, actually, in this kind of practice, there also are some preliminary practices that are helpful. So we could say call them like warm up practices. You know, so as an aging athlete, I have found that, you know, like I was describing going to play softball, that I need to really warm up. If I just go out there and start trying to sprint, like, it's not good. It's hard on the muscles. So somehow similarly, and particularly in this kind of practice of the cultivating loving kindness, there's a few preliminary practices that I have learned that I will want to also teach you. So this morning we'll spend some time learning some of these and also engaging in these practices in a variety of different ways. So basically we'll be doing the cultivation here during this weekend, but also I basically want to give you tools such that if you're interested, if you want to, if you like it, if it seems beneficial, you can continue this training outside using whatever these tools is helpful. Right? So of whatever is being offered here, I would say, you know, helpful spirit is to just have an open mind and give it a try. And then you could see what works for you and what doesn't. And then, you know, in the rest of your life, you could take the ones that work and continue to apply them. And the other ones, just you can let go of them. Similarly, you know, as Dharma teachers, like, you know, I feel like part of my job is to sort of try to convey the teachings and these trainings as I've learned them, and also to do that in some contemporary way that's understandable to people here in the 21st century, in the U.S., here we're doing it in English. So, you know, I do my best in that way, and for me, some of the way that comes through is through a lot of metaphors and things like that. So some of the metaphors work for some people, and some of them don't. So don't break your head about metaphors that don't work. Just let them go, and, you know, another one will be coming up soon enough that hopefully will be more coherent to you or something like that. But if not, let that one go too, and then just continue along. So the first preliminary practice in our mind training in this way is actually one of appreciating your own wholesome qualities. So appreciating your own goodness. And this is also something that is an uncommon exercise for us to do, or even to consider as like a positive thing to do. So this is recognizing that, you know, even if we're all a mixed bag and sometimes we do things that are we regret or we feel like are not so great, we also all have very wholesome qualities too. And it's helpful to recognize that, you know, just in a very, you know, even as objective a possible way, but with love and appreciation, to recognize the wholesomeness that we have, you know, the natural positive qualities that we have. And we're not doing this in an arrogant way, like I'm really generous, that makes me better than someone else, or it's not a competition. It actually is just an appreciation of that which is naturally already there. So I'll give you some examples of what some of those qualities might be, although they're a very wide variety. So generosity itself. So acts of generosity, small and large, you know. It could be something as small as holding a door open for someone or smiling at someone as an act of generosity. Or it could be what you're doing with your life as an act of generosity. Or donations that you make of time, of money, of energy, ways that you give to the Sangha, to your family, to community, in different ways. It could be about kindness or compassion, so ways in which you enact that in your world, in your life. Or even if not enact, like how you see that coming up, like how you notice yourself responding to seeing someone who's in pain, or something like that. It could be around a sense of integrity, honesty that's there, that comes through for you. Someone was telling me recently about, you know, they're telling me this with some regret in some ways, that like they had to do something and at work that involved kind of lying, and they didn't do it very well at all, you know. And I was like, I think that's a good sign, actually. You know, like So from, you know, the thing that they were doing, they were saying it like it's some regret, like it's not making them not as good at their work or something. But it's like, there's a different standpoint from which actually that's a sign of your own natural integrity that it's hard for you to do this. So it was like a helpful reframing for them. So some of these are not, you know, necessarily in accordance with what appears to bring immediate success in the world too, right? But a sense of integrity, honesty, a sense of gentleness is a virtue. A sense of joy, you know, having a sense of joy is another wholesome quality. So many, many different ones. You know, you can probably think of other ones that are there. Even just, you know, being a good friend, being a good sibling, a partner, a parent, you know. So I want you to actually consider, spend a little time here considering your own wholesome qualities. Right. And I would like you to try to come up with at least three. If you don't come up with three, that's okay. At least one, maybe. But three is good, too. So let's just sit and consider this and allow whatever it is that you can to float into your mind. So it could be remembering something that's an overall tendency that you have, even from the time you were a child, maybe. So something that you just consider to be an aspect of, common aspect of your behavior. Or it could be particular action, one-time thing that you remember doing recently or in the past. So allowing yourself to connect with your own goodness, your own wholesomeness. So even your interest in the Dharma and meditation is a very wholesome thing. Have you chosen to spend your weekend in this way? It's considered actually very wholesome human activity. Get notice of, and as you're reflecting on this, how it feels in your heart. So it could be gladdening the heart, lightening the heart. So we'll take this even one step further, where I'm going to ask you to do something a little unusual, which is actually to share this with someone. And notice if already as hearing that you get, I don't want to talk about myself like that. I don't want to say good things about myself to someone else, you know. So understanding it's an exercise of doing this, and just to see if you can share with someone, like, what's one wholesome thing that you appreciate about yourself? And if you want, it could be just briefly describing the episode or just the characteristic of that. And, you know, you can notice if you're a little wobbly in saying that, if you feel like you immediately want to bring up the opposite, you know, to make sure that they know that you're not all good or something like that. You know. But for this purpose, just allow yourself to, as best you can, to share this about yourself. And I understand everyone else is doing this too. And then when someone is sharing this with you, just allow yourself to fully listen, you know, open-hearted listening, and allow yourself to be happy, to sort of take joy in their virtue that they're describing. Right? You notice whatever tendencies come up too, if you start to judge them or, you know, judge yourself or yourself in relationship to them. But also just an exercise of getting to speak this out and also getting to receive this, which hopefully is a joyful exercise. Yeah. So we'll do this in a mindful listening kind of way. So you can find a partner near you. It could be the same person you introduced yourself to or someone different. So I'll find your partner now. I will facilitate the location of partners if someone needs a partner. If someone needs a partner, you could maybe raise your hand. And okay, so you guys are at okay. Does anyone need a partner too? Raise your hand if you need a partner, and you can find each other. Okay. All right, so we'll do this in a little structured, mindful listening kind of way. So let's say the person with the longest hair will be the first one to speak. Oh, even then you can just pick if it's even. And so the instruction is for the other person just to listen, like just to allow yourself to receive with as much openness and kindness as you can. Just hear this person, you know, to bear witness to the positive quality that they're talking about. And the job of the one sharing is actually to see if you can actually just share that, right? Honestly, openly. And we'll just do for a few minutes, and then we'll take a pause and then switch, yeah? Okay, so go ahead. Thank you, partner. Maybe we'll come back around. So what was it like to do this? How was this? Yeah.
I thought for me, feelings came up naturally, or just thinking about what was maybe wholesome. It was harder to express, as you mentioned. I found myself expressing it, but then not as easy to share it for myself.
Yeah. So not as easy to share, and found feelings come up. Like what kind of feelings?
I don't know, I felt confident myself when I was identifying what was wholesome in me. But I don't know, sharing it was almost, there was some sort of doubt or maybe insecurity.
Yeah, so confident when you just...
Yes, not being confident.
Right, so confident when you thought about it quietly for yourself, but then when you had to share someone else, maybe some doubt or something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So recognizing the positive quality, but then also finding, questioning it, doubting it, because maybe there's some taking joy or identification with that. And yeah, it's helpful even in doing this to not expect it to be perfectly pure or something, even the thing that you identify with, because we're all really a mixed bag. So in every moment, there's many, you know, there's an arising of intention that happens. And in each, you know, snap of a finger, there's actually sort of many, 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 many mind moments, you could say. And even an act of generosity, it could be like, you know, pure generosity. Look how generous I'm being, right? Like identification, then guilt about that, then back to generosity, then like, I hope people are seeing how generous I am, and then, you know, right? So we're kind of a mixed bag like that. So, but that's how it is, right? So then, not to dismiss the generosity that was there in that time, or the kindness, or whatever it was, because it seems not, you know, perfected or perfectly pure, really.
I like that structure and the voicing of it have a sort of heart qualities were completely interconnected with, like, not self and impermanence. I mean, they just absolutely arose from each other. And I sort of know that, but somehow in the voicing of it, it was even clearer.
Can you say a little bit more about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the things that just sort of, I feel like I've gotten better and better at not judging people, because I'm understanding that any seemingly obnoxious quality has roots and conditions that just go back for generations. I can just see that all in a nanosecond, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and there's no concrete person there being that anyway. There's just this whole cascade of things happening, you know? And so who's to judge? Mm-hmm. You know, and sort of, and also this way. So I kind of, as both things deepen, they've deepened each other, and I kind of...
Great. So then, yeah, having seeing insight into, like, not self and causality through reflecting on the wholesome qualities, and also unwholesome, right? Yeah. Thank you. Cool. What else? Yeah, back.
In the telling of my the quality that I appreciated, I realized how much I appreciate that when I receive that from others. So it kind of reinforces my doing it.
Right. Yeah. So in reflecting on it, it also makes you reflect on how you feel receiving that. So the reinforcement. And the reinforcement happens in many ways, like both in bringing that up. Sometimes even as you bring up reflecting on that quality, you can feel the quality re-emerging, right? Did anyone feel that? Like you can reconnect again to that quality, even if that exact episode is not here right now, right? Also, then it does make you reflect on both sides of it, so actually understanding the quality more deeply, too. So that's helpful, too. Like, this is actually part of the mind-heart training, is getting more familiar with the flavor and the sense of all these, you know, understanding them much better, too. In the same way that we might visually know something more, you know, actually understanding this more, the qualities of the heart, right? And also related to the one of the quotes that I said yesterday, which is that, the Buddha said, that which we think and ponder upon frequently, this will become the inclination of our mind. Mm-hmm. So because of that, considering, for example, reflecting on acts of generosity in which we have engaged is considered actually a wholesome thing to do. You know, both so to consider before your act of generosity about that positively, then actually to do the act of generosity with as much presence as you can, like not kind of like just toss the thing at someone, but, you know, just really like with as much intention, sort of, right? And then even afterwards to allow yourself to be gladdened by the wholesomeness of that, which again isn't like, oh, aren't I so great because I just did something generous, you know, but just reflecting like, oh, that was a wholesome action. Like that was, I'm glad I did that. Like that feels, even like just like, oh, that feels good, or that was a beneficial thing to do, or, you know. It's still like training, you know, even like you train little kids, it's like, you know, you tell them to say thank you or something, or please, you try and get them to be grateful, right? And then, afterwards you try and reinforce that, like, oh, that was very nice that you said thank you to that. Like, that was great that you pushed the chair in, or that you washed your dish, or that, you know. So a little bit like that, like you give yourself sort of reinforcement, and then the mind dwells in that more often, too. You know, it tends to make that arise more often, so... It's just a very powerful basic principle of mind training, you know, that which we think and ponder upon frequently, that becomes the inclination of our mind. Right? So that is one of the preliminary practices that we will do. And it's actually a helpful one to do in the beginning of doing a period of metta. It sort of softens the heart, you know, helps to open the heart a little bit. And interestingly, both as far as being able to wish well for oneself, but even as far as wishing well for others too, in metta, right? Which can bring up also the insight that, like, oh, maybe there's no difference between that too, you know, our divisions, arbitrary divisions between self, other, inside, outside, you know. So it just softens the heart in general. It's sort of like you know, watering the ground before you plant the seeds, you know, so it's not like hard, brittle ground. You're like tilling the soil there, right, like that. Now, second practice that's a preliminary practice that's done is one of forgiveness practice. And this one can sometimes be one that's a little bit of a tougher one for some people. But I'll tell you the general orientation towards forgiveness as a teaching here. It's also just letting go of grudges that you might be holding in the heart. You know, so the heart might be holding tightly to negative opinions or trying to sort of permanently hang on to something regarding yourself or others, or something that happened in the past. And that kind of clinging or solidifying also prevents this flow of metta in some way, right? So it's just recognizing that as actually a true mechanism of how things work in some ways, you know. It's difficult to be holding a grudge and to be wishing well at the same time. So it's a skillful way of cultivating the heart and cultivating the ability to let go. The best quote I've heard about forgiveness is, "Forgiveness is giving up all hope of a better past." So it's basically like, okay, the thing that happened, happened. And that doesn't mean that, it doesn't mean necessarily forgetting, as in, you know, supposing you keep lending your sibling something and they keep like losing it, right? So that doesn't mean like you necessarily have to keep lending them things, because that's a pattern. But it's like, okay, hating them for it, that's the one that's the add-on, right, to trying to hate. So I think this kind of grudge holding and hatred is kind of the unenlightened mind's best strategy for safety, is like, oh, I will hate that person and then I will remember this and then I will be safe. But there's actually a better strategy, because you could actually remember and see with wisdom and like you're describing, actually understand the causality behind that. So it doesn't mean that you have to act in a way that's unwise, but you can let go of that grudge holding, you know, that tightening of the heart, which is the unnecessary add-on, which is actually causing suffering to yourself and then to the other too in your interaction with them. So for some people, say, you know, in interviews, people who've gone through like quite difficult situations of like being imprisoned or tortured or something, and people ask like, oh, don't you hate the people who imprisoned you, or don't you hate the perpetrators of this? And they say, no, that would be like continuing the torture, you know, like the torture happened and it's over, but like I'm not going to continue that myself by cultivating this sense of hatred and holding. And that seems very wise. You know, I mean, it's very difficult for people to come to that place. But I think it's a wise understanding of what's actually true about holding feelings of revenge or some kind of grudge holding in that way. And the truth is, you know, since it's the best strategy, the unenlightened mind, most of us are unenlightened, then that's what the mind does sometimes, right? So then also forgiving yourself for not being forgiving. So, you know, just allowing, seeing what is there. So in this activity of forgiveness, basically we're trying to just do our best at taking the intentions of forgiveness and then just letting them go. So not worrying about whether something happens or doesn't happen. It's not even about, even if you didn't buy anything that I said before about why that's helpful, you don't have to forgive anyone, you don't have to forget anything, but this is a potentially helpful preliminary exercise to cultivating the heart, right? And optional, as everything is that we're doing here, totally. Right? So usually the way that we'll do this is to have a few phrases that are about forgiveness around things that someone might have done to you, intentionally or unintentionally, and whether it's spoken or action. Then to have a few phrases that are around asking forgiveness for something that you might have done to someone else, intentionally or unintentionally, and also whether it's spoken or action, or even thought, you could say. And the third one is actually forgiving yourself for something you have done against yourself, right? So forgiveness, something that you've done against yourself, whether that's intentionally or unintentionally, thought, word, action, like that. Now, there's another set of them that I actually learned. So in my practice, I spent some time in a monastery in Sri Lanka, so it was like more overtly Buddhist-centering than many secular American settings. So the other one that I learned in this was for any transgression that I've done against the Buddha, I ask for forgiveness. So any transgression against the Dhamma, like any transgression against the Sangha. So if that is meaningful to you, then you could also add that in. I'll say that in the end as a possibility. If you don't know what the heck that means and don't want to do it, also you don't have to do it. Now, I didn't know what the heck it means. Actually, when I was taught this, but my teacher was a Buddhist nun, and she was just like, just do it, right? And I guess the kind of Dharma student that I was like, I mean, basically I was like, the teachers who I saw, I was inspired by them, and I was like, they say they got like that by doing this, so I will do it. I don't even understand it. Like, so if you have that attitude, just do it. But if you don't want to do it, also you don't have to do it, right, if you don't know what it means. And I was actually surprised, like when I said those things, like I actually felt something in my heart that I don't, you know, even understand. So so I offer that to you as a possibility if you want to try that too. So shall we give it a try? Yeah? Okay. So you want to sit in sort of way that's comfortable. This won't take too long, but... it's harder to do these things if you're not too comfortable. So, so we'll just allow ourselves to connect with being present, centered. So I'll say these phrases and you can just repeat them quietly to yourself. And just allow each one to drop in, and then don't worry too much about what happens or doesn't happen in your experience. So just taking each one with as much sincerity as possible. So if I have harmed anyone, intentionally or unintentionally, through thought, word, or action, may I be forgiven. If I have harmed anyone through thought, word, or action, intentionally or unintentionally, I ask for forgiveness. If anyone has harmed me, intentionally or unintentionally, through thought, word, or action, I offer forgiveness as best I'm able. If anyone has harmed me, intentionally or unintentionally, through thought, word, or action, I offer forgiveness as best I'm able. If I have harmed myself, intentionally or unintentionally, through thought, word, or action, I offer forgiveness to myself. If I have harmed myself, intentionally or unintentionally, through thought, word, or action. I forgive myself as best I'm able. Now we'll do the other triad with the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, if you wish. For any transgressions against the Buddha, may I be forgiven. For any transgressions against the Dhamma, may I be forgiven. For any transgressions against the Sangha, may I be forgiven. You can allow your attention to stay with your heart. And we'll begin practice a little bit of well-wishing for yourself. So connecting with your own deepest wish for your own well-being. May I be peaceful and happy. May I be strong and healthy. May I be safe. May I be free from suffering. May I be peaceful and happy. May I be strong and healthy. May I be safe. May I be free from suffering. So I think we'll do some walking practice now.